Start your own radio show now and join our amazing radio family of fun and interesting talent. Be the radio star you've always wanted to be. Visit LATalkRadio.com or email info at LATalkRadio.com now and start your own show today. Listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Matt Polacek, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and for those of you that have been listening, sending in questions and comments, thank you so much, and please continue to help spread the word that every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific time, this show will bring on special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases, entertain, while bringing answers and options to making your lives happier, healthier, and more successful. Now, this show will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more. And I'll introduce you to talented authors, caring people, and new innovations in the areas of health, security, and fun for you and your family. Now, with my experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields who are all working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, while my co-host, Dr. Matt Polacek, takes a little time off from the show, we're bringing in some wonderful guest hosts who, like Matt, are making a positive difference in the lives of others. My guest co-host today is Catherine McWillie. Catherine is the CEO of Custody Calculations, Calendars, and Orders. She has 33 years' experience dealing with family law, 24 of those years as a law enforcement officer with the Los Angeles Police Department, where she responded to radio calls dealing with divorce and custody issues as a first responder to child abuse investigations and other related assignments dealing directly with family law. The last 9 years has been a child custody and divorce coach. She has clients all over the United States and internationally. Catherine, thank you for joining us here on Answers for the Family.
Alan, thank you so much. It's a real pleasure. You know, this is a big departure for me from my usual position of being interviewed, stepping into the shoes as a co-host. So thank you.
Well, it is certainly my pleasure. And Catherine, I got to tell you that this is such a huge field that you deal with on a daily basis that I couldn't wait until we could get you on as a guest. So I thought, you know what, this is a great topic. It's going to be about the Women's Museum, which focuses on many of the outstanding achievements of California women. I was happy to hear that you could join us here as a guest co-host. So before we bring on our guest today, please share with our listeners a little bit about what you do, why you do it, and some of the little less publicized statistics that you have found that are related to family law.
Well, Alan, you know, so often families going through a divorce, they're emotional, they're in crisis, obviously, they're dealing with financial decisions, custody decisions, decisions that are going to impact the next 30, 40 years of their lives and that of their children. And yet when they go and meet with an attorney, the attorney spends maybe the first 20, 30 minutes going over other issues and talking about the process. And then in the next 20 minutes, you get to make all these decisions. So obviously a lot of mistakes occur. Parents don't receive information that they need. So I really provide and translate for them information that they need, that they should be discussing with their attorney, things they need to be doing so that they keep their divorce on track so it doesn't spiral out of control. So often families now, it's terrible. The police are involved, social services are involved, false police allegations, false restraining orders, false child abuse. It's really deteriorating even more so than it was just a few years ago, as if that was even possible. But I think one of the things that most people find interesting from my background as a law enforcement is I spent about 10 years researching the impact and effect of family law. And what I found really was quite shocking. It's probably responsible for 25% of the crime in the United States. That's homicides, suicides, abductions, domestic violence, child abuse, violation of court orders, violation of restraining orders, and so on. So to put just one of those numbers into perspective, it's about 3,500 to 4,000 homicides a year related to family law.
You know, that is just, it's heartbreaking. And when I read that, about 25% of the overall crime that we have is connected to this, it is unbelievable that we are not putting more resources towards this. So I'm just so thankful that you are out there and that you are helping.
I think there's really growing recognition that crime statistics is really, it's deteriorating the country's infrastructure. It doesn't just stop at crime.
Yeah, I agree. Now, I know that as a sought-after speaker, and specifically about parent alienation and other child custody issues, where will you be presenting between now and, say, the end of the year?
Well, actually, just recently I was supposed to have spoken in Prague dealing with family law court, crime, and parental alienation. That's the brainwashing of a child to love only one parent and hate the other. And I was supposed to speak in Prague, but a death in the family prevented that. I am supposed to present in Berlin in September, Washington, D.C. in October. And, you know, and the schedule already for next year is filling up, Ireland, London, and so on for next year.
So, you know, I know you were instrumental in having Laverne University provide classes this year on divorce and custody issues through their extended learning program. Can you share with us a little bit about what the course will entail and how anyone interested in taking the course can get more information on it?
Well, I really want to recognize first, as you said, Laverne University. To my knowledge, this is the first university anywhere in the United States that recognizes the impact of divorce and custody on the community and on the country, and they're offering these classes, which I'll be speaking about and teaching. And we're going to really kind of cover like the ABCs of divorce, from beginner to intermediate to advanced. And when I say advanced, that's the unfortunate group that, you know, their children enter into the divorce process with their parents when they might be 2 and 3, and the parents don't leave the process, the divorce system, until their children age out at 18 or 19 or 20. So, you know, it's a pretty big issue. And if we can do through learning and education and courses, get them out sooner so that they can take care of themselves and to their families, then I think we're benefiting the entire process.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And when we talk about parent alienation, I mean, I think that this is just literally one of the most heinous things that somebody can do. I mean, at a time in which the children are going through a pretty difficult psychological trauma at that point, to add to that by trying to make them hate someone that loves them is just unconscionable to me.
Well, and you're talking about children who have no voice, you know, a 2 or 3 year old, you know, they're a little young to be impacted by parental alienation, but as they become older and they become a participant in testifying against their parents or making and participating in police investigations or social services investigation, to the other end, which is we're actually seeing an increase in the number of child homicides in the ultimate act retribution of parental alienation. So parents murdering their own children. It's very frightening.
Yeah, and it's some strange way they think that they're somehow punishing the other parent by doing that, by taking the life of their own child is just unbelievable to me.
It is.
Wow. Well,
you know what? I do want to point out one thing, too, is that, you know, and a lot of these crimes, many of these parents have never committed a crime before in their lives. The taking of a life, the stabbing, the suicides, these actions have never been taken before by these parents. These are parents that you normally, you know, are law-abiding, but pushed to the edge, they commit and do terrible things.
Well, again, and I want to share with everybody out there that Catherine's going to be with us in a couple of months where she will be the guest and we'll be able to go much deeper in this. So now we get to talk about something much more exciting as far as from a happy standpoint, because our guest today is Diane Peabody, and she's the executive director of the Women's Museum of California. Now, after serving on the museum board for a year, Diane became the museum's director of development, and her experience includes fundraising, event planning, marketing, campaigning, and volunteer management. Diane, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Well, it is our pleasure. And, you know, one of the things that Catherine and I were discussing right before we went on the air was the fact that we weren't aware of this museum. Now, fortunately, you know, our producer, Jan, was aware of it, and we were so thankful that she got a hold of you to be able to allow us to talk a little bit more about it. So I think, for starters, if you can just tell us a little bit about the museum and how it got started.
Yeah, you know, what you just said, that you weren't aware of it, it's one of my life goals to make sure people stop saying that to me. Don't feel like you're alone in that. But it is a really common thing. We started as a really grassroots organization back in the 1980s and have developed into a full-fledged museum. Our founder realized that there was a huge lack of representation of women in both history and art, but primarily her focus was history. And so she started collecting artifacts, mainly about California women, that date back to the 1800s. And, you know, we now develop exhibits in part around our collection, and then also focus on more recent things that are really bringing attention to women's accomplishments, both in California and then beyond as well. So,
well, that is great.
Yeah.
Now, and I also read that the museum is connected to the Women's Hall of Fame. Share with us a little bit about that as well.
Yes. So about 15 years ago, the Women's Museum was one of four co-founders that began the Women's Hall of Fame. And each year we induct 6 to 7 women through various categories, from trailblazer to historian, community bridge builder. So, you know, they're really focused on women that have given back in a great way to their community and have also really trailblazed a path for women moving forward in different career fields and the like. So it's a great, great event every year, and it's a way that we can also preserve the history of these trailblazing women, because in collaboration with the Hall of Fame, we also do oral history with them to make sure that we have their stories documented in their own words.
Now, one of the things that I know I was most surprised about was the fact that the Women's Museum of California is one of only 3 museums in the United States. Now, can you share with us where the museums are? And we know that yours is in San Diego, but where are the other ones?
The other two are in the Virginia, D.C. area. One is Women in the Army that is on a military base back in Virginia, and the other one is Women in the Arts, which is in the D.C. region. I think maybe Alexandria, to be honest. I'm not familiar enough with that area. But that is solely focused on women artists. So we really, at this point, sadly, are the only women's museum that focuses on a broad range of women's history. And, you know, and then there's, to be fair, there's other institutions that are more like homes that have been preserved as museums. So, like, you can go, for instance, to Elizabeth Cady Stanton's home, which is a suffrage leader from the 1800s. But, you know, that's focused really on one individual, not broad women's history as a whole. So, yeah.
You know, Diane.
Did I lose you? Okay.
No.
Actually, we're just handing off to each other. So, Diane, really, it's wonderful to be speaking to you about the museum. And when Alan first told me about the subject, I was really excited because I'd never heard of a women's museum. And when I was doing some research, I thought it was interesting. You know, there's 35,000 museums in the United States, according to Wikipedia. And I thought, wow, only 3 museums for women. I think we need to do a little bit of work to improve that number.
Right, absolutely. And, you know, I mean, one of my down-the-road goals is absolutely to expand. But, you know, the reality is that it takes money and that kind of support. I hate to be that blunt with you, but you know, it's a struggle, and you know, there's a lot of There's a lot of grants out there, but they tend to lean more towards like health and human services types of organizations. And I think it's really a tough time for museums to be raising money. So, you know, it all kind of comes back to getting that boosted up so that we can continue to expand. And I would like to see women's museums along the whole California coast if I had it my way.
Well, sounds good to me.
Yeah, I was going to say you're certainly not alone. Now I know that your current exhibit is Heroines in Arms, Women in the American Military. How are women's experience in the military historically different from men's?
Oh my gosh, we could have hour long discussion easily on that and still have more to cover. But you know, women were really limited for a very, very long time. I mean, in terms of what they could do in the military, for example, when they were first really kind of allowed to start serving was around between World War I and World War II time periods, and that started to develop it. But even then, these women who served in World War II, either as pilots or in the Navy, their benefits were so minimized that their families had to pay if their lives were lost. Their families had to pay to get their bodies back home. I mean, it was literally that horrific that they weren't given any of the same benefits as men, even though they were fighting and risking their lives for our country. So, you know, we've come a long way, but it started out in that kind of realm.
So, Diane, I noticed that you've taken on some pretty tough subjects at the museum. I looked through the website. I saw, like, in 2014, you had an exhibit titled Exposing Scars, which discussed the inner damage that results from violence against women. And then in 2015, you had an exhibit called Tears of War, the Many Faces of Refugee Women. And then in 2013, you had the exhibit which was on women of the, am I pronouncing it correctly, Azizi generation, which is how and why these women from Asia came to America, including the role of picture marriages and the effect of the bombing of Pearl Harbor. So you've really done some amazing work. I really want to hand it to you. I mean, groundbreaking work.
Yeah, you know, we're always trying to figure out a balance because, you know, women around the world have done really incredible things in spite of the challenges that have been placed on them, specific challenges for women, and then also just, you know, life challenges. So trying to figure out how to honor those stories, honor those specific experiences, frankly, without people leaving totally depressed is our ongoing challenge. And like one of the exhibits that you mentioned, Tears of War, was actually really, really uplifting in a way, believe it or not, because we got to see the faces of these women who have come from all over the world and made an incredible home for themselves in California and are getting to experience a future that, you know, they may have not thought possible from where they came. And that exhibit actually is now on tour and continues to be requested by different institutions. So we're happy that that has a life beyond 2014 or whenever it was we hosted it. But yeah, it is a challenge, but it's also so important. We can't shy away from those topics. You know, especially for me, it's especially important when you're talking about any kind of domestic violence. That's an ongoing issue, and until that's resolved, until we figure that out as a society, we have to keep talking about it, right? What else is there to do?
I absolutely agree. But as you said, it's a balance of trying to present both the realistic aspects of, you know, things that we struggle with in our society, and then also I love the exhibit that you're going to be doing, which is Women in Their Field, the first in their field. And Julia Morgan is one of the women that you're going to be profiling, and she was the architect of Hearst Castle, and she's a real favorite of mine. I love Hearst Castle. I have the book. I have the video on Hearst Castle. It was such an amazing collaboration between this woman and, you know, Mr. Hearst. And the backstory, I mean, she did what everybody else said couldn't be done, and she did it in such an amazing time frame. I think people need, and not just her, architects, science Amelia Earhart, all of these women, they were first in their fields, and we need that for our daughters. We need
absolutely
them to see that and be encouraged by that.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think what you're talking about, people saying that with the Hearst Castle that it couldn't be done, I think that's very often a hallmark of what women do, is we're told we can't do something and you just figure out a way to do it, you know? I know I'm motivated by that as well.
Aren't we all?
Yes. Well, you know, one of the, I love the fact that the museum has something for everyone, you know, and I think that's the part that's great, is that there's something for the military, there's something for various generations, and I completely agree. This is where you know, both, you know, daughters, sons, and everything need to be brought to be able to understand what our history is and how beautiful it is that, that so many women have done so many great things to bring us to this point. Now, I'd also like to talk a little bit about some of the community outreach programs that the museum has, that it brings it to the schools, it brings it to the libraries, and other community organizations. So share a little bit about that, because it isn't just a museum that people can go to. It's something that you're taking exhibits and taking it out to the people, which I think is incredible.
Right. Yeah. You know what? We have admittedly a fairly small space here at the Women's Museum, and we transition exhibits every month to 2 months. It's a constant move, you know, from one to the next. So our thought process is it's not doing anyone any good to have these exhibits sitting in our archives. So we want to get them out to folks that maybe wouldn't be able to get here to us, whether that's underserved schools or community centers or libraries. We want to make sure that they continue to have a life and that people continue to benefit from it. So by getting them out into the community, we try to make that possible. You know, and then we also have a great program that we call our Speakers Bureau, and have on average 6 to 10 women at any given point that are available for speaking requests that range in topics. They often coincide with our exhibits, whether that's refugee history or women's military history or, you know, Trailblazers of California. Those, we have those scholars, those activists who can go out and speak on our behalf.
Yeah. Diane, I noticed from the website you have a calendar, and it was pretty full. I mean, you have three and four. Three and four events a week. You have day and evening programs. You have walking tours. Mm-hmm. You do private functions. You guys are keeping pretty busy at the museum from the looks of things.
We do, absolutely. We have a lot of community partners that utilize our space at a heavily discounted rate. So, you know, we've got them coming in and out, and then we have our own programming that we do usually on average once a week. And then it goes from there. So our director of events, God Lover, is so busy all the time. And but you know what? It's good, because it continues to bring people in our doors. And at the end of the day, that's the whole goal, right, is to get as many people here as possible to enjoy it and learn.
Now, I noticed last night you actually had an event on the calendar, the Arc of Service, the Continuing Journey of Women in the U.S. Military. Can you describe that event for our listeners?
Yes. Yeah, so we had an incredible woman named Sandra Adams. She's retired from the military and actually loaned items to us for our current exhibit, and was in the military, I believe, for over 30 years. So she came and really spoke to our members and everybody else who showed up about what she saw over the course of her time and what she witnessed in terms of what women, how women can serve, and how things are continuing to change in terms of the options that women have in the military. So, you know, it was a really great program, and had a great turnout for it. And Sandra Adams, she's a phenomenal person. We're really lucky to have her.
Well, I noticed, too, that on August 17th in the evening, you have another salute to women in the military. Maybe we can help you sell a few more tickets. What about
that would be great.
Why don't you describe what that evening will entail?
Yeah, so that's a little bit more of a panel-style discussion, and so we'll have a few people in for that. One of the individuals that will be speaking is actually a current board member of the Women's Museum, and she spent many, many years doing research on women's service for the VA. She's a psychologist. And so she's going to be coming in and also putting together this panel discussion to speak to what she witnessed in terms of women serving. She's really involved more in the Afghanistan era of service. And then, yeah, we'll have some other individuals that have also served that will be coming in and speaking to their time in service and talking about, you know, maybe how some things need to change, but also, of course, how far we've come. Like I said earlier, it was a pretty bleak start, and it's turned into really incredible opportunities for women in the military.
So now, Ken, if the listeners want to purchase tickets, I mean, is there a cost for that? Do they go on the website? Do they call the museum? How would people participate?
They can go to our website. If they go to the calendar of events, just like you did, and click on that particular event, it will take them to the option to purchase tickets. I believe they are $10. Now you saw how many events we have here, so now I'm questioning myself. But I believe they're $10, and it'll be a great evening. We also always have refreshments out and things like that.
All right. Now, for those of you that are sitting at your computer, you can take down the website. It is thewomensmuseumca.org. And again, if you're out there driving, don't try to write that down, but the information will be there for you by going to our site, answersforthefamily.com. Now, we're going to take a break. We will be right back. And again, if those of you just want to follow along, go to that website. Go to womensmuseumca.org. Follow along with us, and we will be right back.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service, licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services and Westshield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
Your question, five.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family, and we are talking with Diane Peabody, the Executive Director of the Women's Museum of California.
So, Diane, what do you think we can do to help bring the Women's Museum outreach programs to, say, underserved schools and organizations that would really benefit from this information, these exhibits?
I'm sorry. The first part of your question cut out. Would you mind repeating it? I'm so sorry.
No, not a problem. So what do you think we can do to help bring the women's organization outreach programs to underserved schools and organizations that would really benefit from these examples?
Gotcha. Thank you. We actually have an ongoing campaign right now called Give Herstory, H-E-R-S-T-O-R-Y. If you've ever thought about what the word history is, it might click for you there. So we have this ongoing campaign, and it is to specifically fund that program to make sure that nobody who would want to be able to request that for a school can't afford to do so is declined. So when people donate to that campaign, we put that money aside and we hold it for either those special requests that come in. And we also have our director of events going out and communicating with these different schools and trying to get that out to them. So it's twofold in that, you know, we keep the money here for those that come in, and also make sure that we're getting it out to the schools that really need it. So.
And what about maybe parents listening to the show? Could they, you know, take this information to their school districts and make that request, or contact the museum and say, we'd really like to see this come to our school, and help facilitate and publicize that information?
Yeah, absolutely. So we do have the request forms on our website. So if parents are so inclined, they can do that and try to act as an intermediary. I would really recommend speaking to the schools first to know what their different policies are on it before making that request, because, you know, every school handles things a little differently in that regard. But yeah, they're more than welcome to give us a call and ask any questions that they may have, and make that pitch for their school, and we'll do the best we can for them.
All right. Now, we have a listener question coming in. And again, I want to thank those that take the time. We get teachers that call us sometimes after the show and say that, you know, they had some thoughts or some questions. And some of them will also send in some sort of a question ahead of time that allows us to ask it on the air. And for that, we're much appreciative. Keep them coming. This one reads, I was so excited to learn about your museum. I was born in San Diego, and I have lineage to the founding fathers and mothers of the city. I have lived on the East Coast for the last 20 years, and I just moved back to be with my grandchildren. I am very much looking forward to visiting and comparing the history of the amazing women in my family with those featured in the museum. And this is from Joan from San Diego. Thank you, Joan. So what's your thoughts in regards to that, Diane?
Well, I would say definitely check out our website to see what exhibit is happening before you come in, and see if that is of interest. Like I said, we have constant exhibits that are transitioning. But also, you know, if I was understanding that correctly, and she has a lineage to folks here in San Diego, reach out to our archival team, because there is a chance there may be some items of specific interest in our archive upstairs that may not be on display in the gallery either, because it doesn't fit in with that particular exhibit, or simply it's just too sensitive to have on display. We do run into that every now and then. I'm trying to make sure we protect items from light and things of that nature. So, yeah, reach out to us, and we may be able to schedule something for you to come in.
Now, Diane, do you have a favorite exhibit? I know you alluded to the refugee exhibit as being much more positive than you had originally anticipated, but how about some other favorites?
Oh, boy. Well, right now, our Women in Military exhibit, I have to say, is really, really fantastic. It's just so uplifting and impressive to see what these women have accomplished. Our last exhibit was up there for me, and I honestly didn't expect that. That's the funny thing as the director, is you have the idea of what it is, and then the artistic and collections team gets together, and that may not necessarily play out exactly the way you thought it would. But this last exhibit was a little more on the fun side. It was 100 handbags over 100 years, and it was this really amazing donor who donated a collection of literally 100 handbags that ranged from the 1850s to the 1950s. And they were so beautiful. They were, each one of them was a work of art in its own, you know, in its own right. So that turned out to be like kind of up there for me. And to be honest, I didn't expect that. I tend to go more towards the heavier topics that I feel like make a really big impact. But seeing something that made so many people so happy to just enjoy was really rewarding in and of itself. So that was up there as well.
You know, I did see the handbags, and I will tell you that I collect vintage clothes, hats, handbags, costume jewelry. So I was really kind of like, oh, I know I should be gearing towards some of these subjects. But, you know, every once in a while, we need some fun and laughter in lives, you know, because it's not all drudgery. There's so many aspects of life that are wonderful, and we tend to forget that. So I really did. I liked the handbag. I wish I would have seen that exhibit.
Well, You know, it was to date, in as far as everything that I've been able to collect in terms of data, it was our most popular exhibit we've ever had. And it was only up for about a month. The collection came in January, and we happened to have this hole, and we were like, oh my God, we've got to do this. So because of its popularity and because of the request to see it again, we are considering bringing it back next year. So stay tuned. Hopefully you'll have another chance. I want to make sure that people have another chance, because it was so beautiful and so much fun.
Oh, that's great news. So you might try shoes. Shoes are another good one.
Shoes are fun. Absolutely. Actually, there's another exhibit that I think you may, if you enjoy the vintage fashion, may have particular interest in. It's going to be starting later this fall, and it's actually going to be focused, it's a title in progress, but it's going to be focused on the different ways that women have kind of altered their image or worn kind of out-of-the-box things to fit into beauty standards. So we're going to have things like corsets and a lot of undergarments and things of that nature that are vintage from turn of the century. So that's going to be really cool to see.
It should be fascinating. I don't think people realize how much the body was manipulated by those corsets and how much damage they actually did.
Oh, yeah.
To internal organs.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So if you were to describe the ultimate exhibit, what would the subject be, and how would you design it if you got to do, you know, from A to Z? What would that look like, and what would the subject be?
Do you know how hard of a question that is?
That's why get to be the guest co-host. I don't have to answer that question.
I know. It's really tough. You know, so personally, my big topic in history that I always go back to is World War II. So we actually are talking about doing an exhibit in the next couple years that will focus on women of the home front in World War II, particularly in the state of California, and their contributions. And so it's kind of a look at all the real-life Rosie the Riveters. So I'm really excited about that exhibit. That's my big area of focus. I studied it in college quite a bit. Anytime I travel, if there's a World War II kind of focused destination, that's where I go. I actually dragged my husband to the D-Day beaches on our honeymoon. That's the exhibit that I'm super excited about personally. Now, obviously, there's a lot of other topics, but that's what gets me mentally going.
So do you subscribe to Military History Magazine?
I don't, but I think I need to check it out.
Yes, Military History Magazine does a lot in that genre. So I have my subscription, so you should think about it. And then they also have a World War II magazine, Military History, specializing in just World War II. So you might want to check that out as well.
Yes, totally will. My favorite museum outside of the one I work at is the Imperial War Museum in London. It focuses on Churchill. So yeah, it's so much fun. It's so much fun to learn about. So.
Oh my goodness! So how would you do the exhibit? Are you going to do an interactive film video? Physical displays or a combination?
Yeah, it will definitely be a combination. I think it's going to be, you know, a project that we set a couple years in advance, because we want to be able to reach out to people in the community and get those personalized stories. So we're going to follow the stories and then from there see how we can present them best. Those who are still alive that can tell their own stories will definitely want to do oral histories with. And then, you know, also be collecting artifacts and things of that nature to let those tell the story as well.
Now, as you mentioned the World War II one, when you have that one set, make sure that you come back on and let us know. One of my sons is a huge World War II buff and would love to come down and to come down with me. So I'll bring him. We'll come down to San Diego and we'll check it out.
Now, I will let you know.
As far as me personally, I love film festivals. I've been to film festivals all over the world, and I read that you hold one each year. So since I missed this year's event. Can you fill us in a little bit about who the winners were from this year's event and what's in store for 2018?
Absolutely. We actually didn't host a festival that gave out awards. For us, it was really about celebrating all of the women's stories. So we didn't honestly want to create that kind of competition vibe to it, if that makes sense. But next year, we are switching things up a little bit. It will be all women directors, but we are adding a student section to it and are raising money to do one scholarship award. So for that category, we will be putting together a jury and doing a scholarship. This year, though, it was so much fun. It was just absolutely wonderful to see the interactions that came out of it. There was a lot of really, really great stories, a lot of very, very diverse stories. We had people come in from all over the world. We had a woman director fly in from Bali for our film festival, another one from London, folks from New York, obviously folks from L.A., so getting to see their interactions and the panel discussions and, you know, just talking about, I mean, if you've been to a lot of film festivals, you know, but talking about their process and their inspiration and how these different stories came to be. It was really, for me personally, it was one of the most rewarding weekends probably of my entire career, because just getting to see everybody lift one another up through all of it and be so supportive of each other was really exciting and really special. So, you know, it's all about the girl power around here. It was a lot of fun, and it really hit home that weekend. So it was really, really great.
Okay, so we've been talking about your ideal exhibits. We've talked about the film festival. We've talked about this great work. So I want to kind of put my two cents in, because when I look through your website, I didn't see any exhibits on women in law enforcement, and obviously as a retired law enforcement officer, you know, I want to see, is that something that you have thought of or explored or is in on the drawing boards? Because women have actually been part of law enforcement since the early 1800s, and I'm not sure if you're aware of that or not.
Yeah, absolutely. It's actually on our list of, you know, that we keep throwing around. It's really tough when we only get to do, you know, 6 or 7 exhibits a year. But it is on our list, our wish list, so to speak, of future exhibits. You know, it's also, we also are going to want to see who we'll be able to collaborate with in the community. There is a sheriff's museum. There is a police museum here in San Diego as well. So whether or not they're willing to jump on board with us will be a big determination, because that is actually one area that I don't know that we have a lot in terms of our own personal archive. And often that, you know, that leads us in a direction in terms of our exhibits of what do we have in our archive to support that exhibit. So yes, it will continue to be talked about, and hopefully we can make it happen in the next year or two.
Well, definitely. I want to make sure, maybe we talk off air, but I belong to the Los Angeles Women's Police Officers Association. So if San Diego doesn't want to jump on board, maybe I can speak to our board, because I really want to talk about the fact that, you know, we're approaching 40 years from when women fought for the right to work on the streets, to work in patrol, mm-hmm. and not to be, you know, restricted to just jail or juvenile positions. So I really
right.
think that we're approaching a milestone that we should recognize, because,
yeah,
you know, I joined the department in 1983, and that year, that our particular class, we had more women in that class than LAPD had ever had before. And we had about 55 recruits, men and women, and about 25 of us were females. And we really felt, you know, the pressure to succeed, not just for ourselves, but for the women who worked so hard to give us that opportunity, and then mm-hmm. for the women who would follow us. And now to see that we have not only women every day on the streets, and not, you know, a novelty as it was when I first came on board, but now we have women who are in the position of chief of police.
And, right.
And that happened.
San Diego has one of those women, Shelley Zimmerman. She's amazing.
Well, we, you know, across the country, there's an explosion of mm-hmm. women. San Francisco had a female police chief, and she was amazing, and, you know, the East Coast. So I really want, you know, people to recognize, as you said, the military and the police department. You know, there's really been an explosion on that. And then, two, I'm going to put my two cents in here, too, because LAPD works so closely with LA Fire Department. You know, that's another category. You know, women as firefighters did the same fight to get there and, you know, work on the fire departments and do the same job. And really, we've changed the face of policing. We've changed the face of firefighting. And we've changed the face of our military just by virtue of our, you know, positions as we become integrated in all these groups. So consider that one, too.
Okay. Well, you know what? Actually, this is just in time because tomorrow is our programs meeting. So I will pitch it for you there.
And I'll be happy to go down and put in my two cents if that would help too.
Absolutely. Thank you.
So, Diane, I just want to thank you so much for coming on. This has been, I think, an eye-opening experience for many people. And tell us, what is the next thing? If somebody can go to the website, I know that they can get the information there, but for those people that are in and around San Diego and they go, we want to go there now, tell them, where is it, how can they get there, and what can they see?
Yes, so we are in Liberty Station, and which is in the Point Loma region. As you heard, we talked about our current exhibit that is on until the end of August, and then we'll be transitioning over to an exhibit that features the history of women of the Old Globe Theater here in San Diego, which a lot of these women actually went on to become very famous. So you'll recognize a lot of those names, which is really, really fun. So like I said, Liberty Station, and again, go to our website, womensmuseumca.org.
All right.
Alan, just want to say what a pleasure it's been for me today to be a guest co-host and to learn about the Women's Museum. Diane, look for my name. I'm definitely going to become a member, and I'm going to stop by the museum soon. I actually have to head in that direction. My patent attorney's in San Diego. So, again, such a pleasure, Alan. Thank you so much.
And you're very welcome. And Diane, again, thank you so much. And feel free to contact us anytime. Let us know what's going on so that we can help share it with the world.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me. Have a great day, guys. Take care.
All right. And for everybody out there, please be sure to put us on your calendar to tune in next Monday, August 14th, when we will be joined by Sarah Ellison, author of Lessons from a Difficult Person, How to Deal with People Like Us. And if you missed or you want to share our show with friends, please visit answersforthefamily.com or catch our latest show on iTunes, and please leave a review. You know, as it greatly increases our iTunes ranking and helps us to expand and to reach more families in need. Now, Catherine, I gave people a little bit of a teaser saying you are going to be back. Share with us a little bit about, again, some of the things that they can look forward to when we have you back in December.
Well, I think we'll cover a lot more about the impact and effect of family law in this country. We're also going to be talking about the positive things that families can do to take back more control of their case and how they can work better with their attorneys, how they can stay away from making the mistakes that create the havoc and create the devastation so that they can get in the process and out of the process as intactfully, intact as possible, financially as well as emotionally.
Now, I want to touch on one part which has to do with mediation. What's your thought in regards to that? How much of sometimes this fueling the fire type of thing comes from having separate attorneys, and how can it be handled a little differently sometimes in regards to mediation? Because I don't even know that a lot of parents even recognize that as a possibility.
Well, actually, that's a great question, because 30% of my business revolves just around the issue of mediation, you know, preparing the clients about options they should consider and think about. What are some positions of, you know, let's be reasonable. If they offer this, we want to do this. And then there's sometimes when I'll say, no, we need to hold the line here, but here's what we can do to make the other party feel more comfortable, or what is it that you need to make you feel more comfortable? I mean, just as I was driving in, one of my clients called me saying they were, they lost custody on dealing with religious holidays, and that was heartbreaking for them, and yet their attorney going into mediation said this will never happen. So it's also being realistic and making sure you really talk about what is important to you. And I think that, you know, if we take out some of the emotions and having someone you can talk to about those emotions before you walk in and you're blindsided, you know, that's so important. And getting the right frame of mind is so important.
Well, I couldn't agree more. So for everybody out there, that's just a little taste of what we'll be able to talk about when you come back in December. Now, for many of you out there, you can also go to our website, and you can subscribe or resubmit your name to download your free copy of the Attitude of Gratitude Journal. It's your 21-day guide to achieving the quality of thankfulness through self-discovery. And I might want to add that we've been getting some feedback on that. We've had people that have now sent us in letters that have talked about that they did this months ago and how much more gratitude that they're feeling within their family. So again, it's free. Go there, check it out. It's certainly something that can help everybody's family. Now, last but not least, the next time that you're on Facebook or Twitter, please remember to stop by our page. And if you like what you find, please like us. And for everybody out there, be good human beings. Do something wonderful for someone else. Have a great week. Bye now.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Matt Polacek, only on LA Talk Radio.